And we're holding on steady for 12 Ahmed Bey's 13 lines from the bottom by the two dots. The Mishnah said, Remeir Omer Ba'avodim Omer Le'Haresh Alach Lefanecha. We had in the Mishnah then a person stolen animals or avodim, and they got old, and we talked about yesterday that old means, or it would also be that they became weak, and we're talking the Le'Hodr body, where it's not going to become strong again, so either way, we're talking about an irreversible change. So then the Gazlan is koinet with that shinui, and he pays the value of it, kishasek zela, as it was at the time when it was stolen. Then the Mishnah had said, Rameyer had said, that when it comes to avodim, then it's not so, because since avodim are like karka, then you can say, harei shalach lefanecha. Since karka ain't an exelus, we say that you can't truly steal karka because it always remains where it is, and therefore it's always considered to be in the reshus of the original owner. Rameyer says the same thing is true as far as avodim, and therefore the same din would apply, even though now the eved is old or weak or whatever, he can say, harei shalach lefanecha, it was in your possession the whole time, and therefore all of the aging and depreciation and whatever happened while it belonged to you, and I'm not responsible to reimburse for that. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Chanina bar Rav Dimi Omer Rav, halacha ki Rav Meir. So Rav is saying the halacha is like Rav Meir. But the question is, Rav shavik masnisin va'obid ki Rav Meir, shavik rabbanan va'obid ki Rav Meir, why is Rav ignoring the opinion of the Chachamim and following Rav Meir? We don't usually do that. The answer is Amri. So they say, Mishum de Braisa ib Chatanya. The reason is because there's a Braisa that has it the other way around, that has the opinions flipped around, that has Reb Meir saying that he has to pay him, and the Chachamim saying that by Avodim, he can say, Harei Shalach Lefanecha. Okay, question is, Rav Shavit Masnissin V'Ovid Kibraisa? Fine, why is Rav ignoring the Mishnah and following the Braisa? When usually when we have a Mishnah has the opinions one way and a Braisa has them the other way, we usually say the Braisa is wrong and the Mishnah is right, because the Mishnah was composed by Rebbe for the entire Jewish people. The Braisas are more like private collections that were put together by various Tanoim, and sometimes there might be mistakes in them, or they might follow only one opinion of what the earlier opinions of Tanoim were. So the answer is, Rav Masnissin Nami Ikhotani. As a matter of fact, because Rav's version of the Mishnah, that the way he learned it from his Rebbeim, is also the other way around. Rav's version of the Mishnah is also that the Chachamim say, is that Reb Meir says Mishalim Kishas Zela, and the Chachamim say that by Avodim he says Harei Shalach Fana. Okay, well, the question is, Umay Taima de Rav de Abich Masnissin Mekame de Braisa. Fine, but what is it that causes Rav to say that the version of the Mishnah as we have it is backwards, and that his version is correct, because, and he's going to say, because it's supported by a Braisa, Adrab and Nepoch LeBraisa, Mekame Masnissin. Why shouldn't we assume that the way we have it is correct, the Braisa has it backwards, and the Braisa should be corrected to match the Mishnah? Why is Rav doing the other way around? The answer is Amri, because the answer, my time at the Rab the Apich Masnissin Mekame de Braisa, Ad Rab and Nepoch Le Braisa Mekame Masnissin. Why doesn't he flip around the Braisa to match the Mishnah, and he should have the same version of the Mishnah as everybody else? The answer is Amri, Rav Nami Masnissin Ipcha Asnie. So no, it's not just, as we said before, that Rav himself holds that the Mishnah should be flipped around. Rav Masnissin Nami Ipchotoni would mean Rav taught that the Mishnah should be flipped around. Well, the question is why. So now we're saying, actually, Amri Rav Nami Masnissin Ipcha Asniye. Rav was taught to begin with by his Rebbeim the Mishnah the other way around. So before, if Rav himself taught it backwards of the way we have it, then we could ask why he did that. But if he learned it from his Rebbeim the other way around, well, then we can't ask on him why he did it that way, because that's how he learned it from his Rebbeim that this is the correct version of the Mishnah. So therefore, so that would answer why Rav does that, and then why he paskins like Reb Meir. Now, the Gemara is going to ask in a few lines. In that case, it comes out he's paskins like the Chachamim, actually. Still, why is he saying the halacha is like Reb Meir? We'll get back to that soon. But anyway, the Boris Ema, or another answer, you could say, you know when? It's true. If you're going to have one Mishnah versus one Braisa, then that maybe not necessarily did Rav learn the Mishnah from his Rebbeim the other way around. Maybe, in fact, he learned it the way we have it, that Rameyer is the one who says, Harei Shalach Lefanecha. But If it's true, if you have one Mishnah versus one Braisa, then you're going to say the Mishnah wins out, and we would say the Mishnah, the way we have it in front of us, is the correct version. But but here we have when we have two Braises that contradict the Mishnah, it's very unlikely that both Braises are wrong, so therefore that are backwards, so therefore that makes it much more likely that the version of the Mishnah that we have is incorrect, and that it should be the other way around. So we have one Braisa so far. We said that there's a Braisa that says the other way around, and now the Gemara is going to bring another Braisa from which we can also see that the Meir doesn't hold the way he says in the Mishnah, but rather the other way around. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hamachlif Para B'chamor. If a person trades a cow for a donkey, the yolda and the cow gave birth. Now Rashi explains we're talking about machlif because usually an animal, how you usually kona an animal would be only with mashicha. And when it comes to mashicha, the question is going to be now, when did the cow give birth, before or after the chalifin? Well, before or after the kinyan? Well, if you had done a kinyan of mashicha, there would be no question. Obviously you can see whether it took place before or after the mashicha. Therefore, we have to have, and you can't say that it was kinyan kesef, because you can't be koina an animal with kesef, only with mashicha or chalifin or various other things like that. Therefore, the case is presented involving chalifin, because that would be one of the ways, that would be one of the only ways in which you could buy the animal sight unseen, and then where you could be koina the animal sight unseen, and then it turns out that the animal has given birth, and you don't know whether it was before or after. So the din is, with kinyan chalifin, you don't need both sides to do their mashicha. When you're doing this machlif para b'chamor, it's enough that the one who's going to be getting the chamor does the mashicha on that, and then automatically the other one, the para, is acquired wherever it is. So therefore we can have that the chamor is in front of us right now, the para is back home in his barn, So Reuven is giving Shimon his para and taking Shimon's chamur, and they're trading that way. So Reuven does mashicha on the chamur. Meanwhile, Shimon goes to the barn to get the para, and he finds that it gave birth, and we don't know whether it was before or after. So that's why it's presented in that way. Similarly, if somebody sells his shivcha knanis, and she gave birth, and again, with a shivcha knanis, Rashi points out, so here you don't need hamachlif specifically because an eved knani or shivcha knanis can be a valid kinyan for them as kesef, as we learned in Kiddushin, and therefore you can have that money was paid for her, but she wasn't present. Anyway, so either way, the point is, so now you have a baby, and so who does the baby belong to? The baby animal or the baby eved, who does it belong to? Zeh omer b'shusi yolda. So the seller says it gave birth while it was still in my rishus, b'halosh shosik, and the other one, the buyer, is quiet. So this is a case of bori v'shema. This is a case. One is saying, I know for a fact that this animal or this shivcha gave birth while it was still in my possession, before we did the trade or before we did the sale, and the other one is quiet because he doesn't know. So Rashi explains the case of Bori Veshema. Tosfos explains that actually it could also be that there's different opinions about whether Bori Veshema, Bori Odif or not. You have an opinion that says, which we're going to learn later in the Masechta, that in the next parak, towards the end of the Masechta, we're going to learn an opinion that not necessarily is Bori Veshema, Bori Odif, but he would say Shtika Kohida, that when he's quiet amounts to being moida to the other. Anyway, so Zochaba, so the one who's making the body claim is the one who's Zocha, so therefore in our case, the seller would be able to keep the baby. What about Ze'eme Eniyadea, Ze'eme Eniyadea? What about if neither one knows what actually happened? Yachloiku, then they split it. This is the case of Momana Mutal Basafik, and therefore Chokin. The Gemara discusses in Bava Metzia, that that may only be according to the opinion of Sumchus, maybe according to the Chachamim, we would say something different because we would say one of them is Muchzik in it. So Yachalaku, Zeim b'Shusi v'Zeim b'Shusi. What about if both of them are making a tainus body? Reuven says it certainly happened when it was still in my Rishus. Shimon says it certainly happened when it was in mine. So then Yishava Hamoicha Shavirshus Hayolda. Then the seller Reuven has to swear that it happened in his Rishus. Lefisha Kol Nishvoin Shematorda Nishvoin V'Loi Meshalmin Divrei Meir. Because Meir points out, any time in the Minat Torah, any time a person swears, you never have daraisa where a person is swearing in order to collect money. In the Torah, you have three cases where a person is swearing, which are in this week's parasha actually, and you have there always a person is swearing in order to be potter. You have a case of shomrim, you have a case where there's one aid, and you have a case of Moedim Mitzas. All of them are learned from Sukkim. Two of them are learned from Sukkim in this week's parasha, the other one from someplace else. And the point is that we say that it's only when the one from whom the money is being claimed is the one who swears that he's potter and that he's potter from paying. The whole concept of swearing in order to collect is only derabanan. So the mayor says in this case you can't say that you, Shimon, should swear that this happened in your Rishus, and then you'll be able to collect the baby Eved or the baby animal, because it doesn't work that way, Darad Isa. So therefore, the mayor says that necessarily the Moicher is going to have to be swearing that he's Potter from giving it to the other one, and then in fact he'll be Potter. Rashi points out there is another consideration we have to take into account over here. We're going to learn in a few weeks at the beginning of Bava Metzia, Beis Hashem, about a concept called Heilach. Now, when you have a case of Moedim Mitzas, which is kind of what you have, which is basically what you have over here, because Reuven is saying, I agree, of course, that the Parah is yours, but the baby is mine, so that's a case of Moedim Mitzas. But we have a case called Heilach, where a person says, for example, you're saying I owe you 100. Actually, I owe you only 50, but Heilach, here's the 50 right now. So that's not necessarily considered Moedim Mitzas, and you wouldn't necessarily have the Shvuah of a Moedim Mitzas for that. So over here, the question is, he's giving him the Shivcha right now. Isn't that a case of Heilach? So Rashi points out that Gemara explains in Bava Metzia, the Gemara explains we have to be talking about that he cut off the hand of the Shivcha before everything was finished. So now it's not Halach anymore because he's not giving him the Eved, or Shivcha, intact. So therefore it's not Halach. Halach would be where he actually says, here it is exactly as I told you. But here it's not going to be. So the Gemara discusses that in Bava Metzia. Anyway, the point is, so the mayor says Nishboin Voy Mishaman, the Chum say no, in Nishboin Loyala Avodim, Voyala Karkois. So the Chacham say no, you never swear about anything involving Avodim or Karka, because the whole concept of a shvua, the Torah mentions, only in connection with Metaltalin. So therefore, the result would be, the Chachamim would say, Rashi explains, that it's going to remain in the possession of the Moicher, unless the Lekeach brings a proof that the birth took place after the Chalifin or after the Kinyan was done. So we see that the Chachamim are the ones who hold that an Eved is like Karka, which is exactly as we're saying in our Mishnah, and Rav Meir says the opposite. So that's why Rav is saying that our Mishnah must be backwards, because you have two different brises that express the point that Rav Meir says that we don't treat Avodim like Karka, one that flips around, one that takes our Mishnah and flips it around, and the other that where Rav Meir is saying you do swear about a claim involving Avodim. So therefore we see that Rav Meir does not consider Avodim to be like Karka, and therefore that causes Rav to say that our Mishnah is backwards. Okay, so the question is, hi halacha k'Rav Meir, then why is Rav phrasing that the halacha is like Rav Meir? Halacha k'Rabbanan mi'mayilei. He should still say halacha is like a chachamim according to my version of the Mishnah. The answer is fine. That's what it means. Hachikamer. L'maydach chitu v'tanisu. He's telling the other Amiroyim, he's telling the other Talmidei HaYeshiva, according to the way you have the Mishnah backwards, it's going to come out halacha k'Rav Meir. Myself, I learned the Mishnah that it's the other way around. Rav Meir is the one who says that that he has to pay k'shas ha'gzela, and the Chachamim say haresh halacha fanecha, so therefore the halacha would be like that. So that's what he means when he says halacha k'Rav Meir. Okay, the question now becomes, so what does it come out from that? It means that Rav is saying that an Eved is considered like Karka, because he's saying the halacha is like what we have in front of us in the Mishnah as Rav Meir's opinion, and what Rav himself has as the Chachamim's opinion. So according to that opinion, we're going to say that, an Eved is considered like Karka. Is that in fact so? Well, Omer of Daniel, Omer of Katina, Omer Rav, if a person grabs a hold of somebody else's Eved Knani and has him do work for him, Potter, so then he's Potter from paying for the Eved, for the Eved's work. If you're going to tell me that an Eved is considered like Karka, am I Potter? Then why would he be Potter? Isn't the whole point is that we're saying that Karka remains in the possession of the seller? We're saying of the original owner, because Karka ain't an exelus. By the same token, the Eved, in other words, it's one thing. If we say an Eved is not considered like Karka, then we can say that the Eved would be like we learned yesterday in the Mishnah, we learned yesterday in the Gemara right before the Mishnah, we had a case where somebody grabbed a shur that belonged to somebody else and did malacha with it and did plowing and planting with it. It was a one-time thing. Rav Nachman made him pay because he was doing this kind of thing regularly. Ordinarily, we would have said that no, he doesn't have to pay because the fact is that you call a gazlan and shaman kashas zela, and there's no change in the value of the animal before and after what he did with that.
But so he seems to have him with his curvets.
No, we're talking about he grabbed it only for a short time. He did work with it and then he returned it. So it didn't have time to go up or down in value, really. So normally we would say he'd be Potter, and only in that one case, because he was doing this regularly, sort of Nachman penalized him to keep him from doing it again. But here, we would, if we say that an Eved is considered like Metalpolin, then fine, then we can understand Rav's opinion, when we can understand Rav's statement. But if we say that an Eved is like Karka, how would that work? The Karka is considered to be the whole time in the possession of the original owner. Therefore, he should have to pay for the work that the Eved did. Yeah, it would be, in other words, Tosfos points out that he'd have to pay him rent in effect for it, as we're going to talk about in the continuation of the Gemara. So doesn't that show that Rav holds that an Eved is considered like Metalblin? And the answer is no, because Hocha Mayaskinen, because the case that Rav is talking about, Shaloi B'Shas Malacha, we're talking about that he did it at a time when the Eved is not doing Malacha for his master, either because it actually explains at the time, with a time of day or whatever, a time of day or a time of year, when this Eved is not usually doing Malacha, or because right now the owner doesn't have any work for the Eved to do. So therefore, it's a case of Zenen of Zalei Chaser. The second guy who grabbed the Eved is benefiting from the Eved. The first one didn't lose. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that Zenen of Zalei Chaser is Potter from paying. So nothing to do with whether it's Karka or Metalpolin. Even by Karka, that rule of Zenen of Zalei Chaser would apply. Ki hod shalach leirab abel amori barmar. As in fact, we find that Rab Abba had sent the question to Mori Bar Mar. He says, "Boy, me name Rav Huna. Ask Rav Huna the question." So Rab Abba himself wasn't able to come to ask Rav Huna himself, or he didn't have the break tight to whatever. So he asked Mori Bar Mar to ask Rav Huna, "Hadur b'chatzar chaveda shalom yidaitei." If somebody lives in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge, sorech lahalos leischar, does he have to pay him rent or not? The shocholei, and he got back the answer. Ain't tzarech lahalos leischar. He does not have to pay him rent. Rashi points out. When we learned this back on Daf Chof Chafalik, we talked about that we're talking about the chotzer is anyway not going to be rented out. So therefore, it's zenan of a zalei chotzer. If he was going to rent out the chotzer to somebody else, there is a chotzer because meanwhile he's preventing him from renting it to somebody else. But this is zenan of a zalei chotzer.
Some people don't want to rent the place because they don't want to have headaches of rough people.
So we talked about that when we learned about the sugya in the second paragraph. We talked about if there is any depreciation to the house, even a minor depreciation, even let's say the walls are turning black from people living in the house or whatever, then yes, you can already require him to pay the full rent because there is a chaser over here. But where there's truly no chaser at all, then as then was a chaser, it would be kind of like midas doim for the other guy to not allow it. So therefore, so the same thing over here, the same thing over here, even if we say that an eved is considered like karka, then we can still say that he's potter from paying for the eved's work.
Well, wait.
So the Gemara asks, Hochi Hashta, how are you thinking to compare these two cases? Bishrema Hossam, now over there, when it comes to the Chotzer, you know, we had two explanations in the Gemara over there why it is that he should be Potter. Now, the fact is, when you live in a house, there is going to be some slight depreciation and then first of all, like you said, yes, you're with tenants, but more to the point, also, inevitably, using a house involves a little bit of wear and tear. But we said there's two reasons why it would be offset and why there might not be an issue. We had an opinion over there who said that when a house is lived in, then the house remains intact. In other words, the fact that somebody is living in the house helps it, because that way, as we talked about there, you have inevitably things in a house, little things break, and when somebody's living there, they notice it and they fix them, and therefore that keeps the house from falling apart altogether. So then after all, the owner has a benefit from the guy living over there. Bein lamanda omo shi'iyah yukas shar. We had another opinion over there that referred to a pasuk that says that shi'iyah, which means desolation, breaks the gate. We said over there that a house that's uninhabited is a hangout for shadim, and they destroy the place. So then also nichale. So then also the owner would rather have the place be inhabited and prevent the shadim from destroying it. So those would be reasons to say that he should be potter from having to pay rent. So in other words, it kind of offsets. The Rashba explains what we mean is, in other words, in principle, there is a little bit of damage to the house by living there, by Judas HaSaregel, if nothing else, but the fact that these two things outweigh that. The Rosh talks about really that it's basically Zenen of Zalei Choser, and the Gemara is bringing this whole concept of Shi'i Yukashar as only on a smachta. That really it's Zenen of Zalei Choser, but even if you were to argue that's not truly Zalei Choser, the fact is it's more than outweighed by preventing the Shadim from taking up residence over there. Al Elohamba, but over here, Mi Nichalet Nichoshavde, does the master want the Eben's strength to be weakened? Wouldn't he rather that the Eben has some time off to recuperate? And the answer is Amri. They answered in the Beis Medrash, Hochi Nami Nichalei. We could actually answer that yes, in this case, actually, the master would like it. The Lo Listerei Avdei, he would want that the Eved shouldn't get lazy and shouldn't learn to be lazy and get out of the habit of not working in the slack season. So therefore, he would rather that the Eved is kept busy. So in that sense, when the other guy is Totif Avdei Shachaverei and does Malacha with it, in a way, he's also it's true that there's a certain downside to it in that the Eved doesn't have the chance to rest. But on the other hand, the upside of it is that the Eved is not going to be lazy. So therefore, it's kind of like the situation with Chatzar Chavera, and therefore Rav can say that he's potter from pain.
Nowadays, I can understand, but then everything you have to do, so much preparation that you had hands on that. It's always going to have work.
Not necessarily. So that's the point we're saying. We're saying when the master didn't have any other work for him. You can have, for example, it's easy enough to understand. A person might, for example, have an Eved who's only good for field work. Well, then, in a time when his field is already harvested and everything has been done, then he might not have anything for the Eved to do. So, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Bei Rav Yosef Bar Choma, in the household of Rabbi Yosef Bar Choma, which is the father of Rava, they would have Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama would lend people money, and then when there were people, there were these people to whom he had lent money, he would grab their avodim, ba'abdi b'hu malacha, and have these avodim do malacha for him without paying for the malacha. Again, we're talking about on days when the eved had no work anyway, so Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama would be doing that. Omale Rabba Bray, so Rabba, his son asks him on the side of it, he actually, it says, it should say Rava, really, because Rava is the son of Rabbi Yosef, Rava, the famous Amora from Shas, is the son of Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama. So Rabba, his son asks him, my time of Ovid Marhafi, Rebbe, why are you doing that? Isn't there a possible problem of Ribis involved? After all, you lent these people money. So Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama answers, the Omer Rabbi Nachman, the answer is because I'm holding, like what Rabbi Nachman says, Avda Nahum Krese Loy Shavi. An Eved is not even worth the bread that you feed him for his stomach. So in other words, Rabbi Nachman is saying basically like this, you have an Eved, you're feeding him, the work you get out of him is not really even worth the actual amount you're feeding him. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says there's no problem. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying there's no problem of ribis over here. On the contrary, in a way, I'm kind of doing the owner a favor. At the time when I'm having this Eved work for me, I'm feeding him. The Eved, the master during that time is potter from feeding him, so therefore he's benefiting from it. I'm not the one gaining from it. But Rava says to him, Ema do Amr Rav Nachman, Gugan Doru Avde. You know what? Rav Nachman would be talking about somebody like, for example, his own slave Doru. We find in a few places in Chas that Rav Nachman had an Eved Kanani by the name of Doru, Demarked Bay Kuvin. This Doru was an idler. He would go dance in taverns with the idea that people will buy him drinks. So therefore, he's wasting his time. He doesn't really know how to do anything useful. And then Rav Nachman still has to feed him. So therefore, Rav Nachman is saying that kind of Eved is not really even worth the food you give him. Rav Nachman
passed.
No, the point is, in other words, that he didn't really have this Doru didn't really know how to do much in the way of useful work. So therefore, and Rav Nachman still being now technically the Gemara says a master can tell his Eved, I say me the in his honor, you have to work for me, I don't need to support you. But Rav Nachman wasn't going to do that. He supported the Eved, even though he's not doing any useful work for him. But Pashtus, he didn't free him because there's a mitzvah say not to do that. He probably didn't sell him because who would want to buy such an Eved? So therefore, he's kind of stuck with him. So Rav Nachman would say about such an Eved that he's not even worth the food that you give him. And in the relationship between a Yid and the Eved, you have a similar thing. You know, it talks about in Svarim, a Yid has to be careful not to be that kind of Eved as well, where like Hashem is supporting him and he's not earning his keep. But anyway, so that would be that. Kulu Abdi, Mevin Abdi. But Rava says the fact is most other Avodim do useful work. So therefore, they are worth. So therefore, so you're having hana. So fine, it is. So fine, it is zen. It is zeloy chaser. Fine, because you're doing it at a time when the eved otherwise wouldn't be doing work. But on the other hand, isn't there the problem of ribis that you're having hana from them? Omele, so Rav Yosef says, I'm not Rav Daniel severely. Okay, but I also hold like what Rav Daniel says that we said at the top of the Amud. We just said that if a person grabs a hold of somebody else's Eved and does Malacha with it, Potter, so he's Potter from paying, as we said, because it creates a benefit for the owner that this way his Eved learns not to be, that his Eved learns to not be lazy. So I'm not hurting the owner at all, and then there's no problem. Omalei, but Rava says, Hanimili Heichadolei Masik Bohuzuzi. Sure, but Rav Daniel's din would only apply where they don't owe you money. But, Meir, Kivin Demasik Bohuzuzi, but you, they owe you money, Mechsik Ribis, wouldn't it look like Ribis? So fine, there may not be a problem of Zenen, there may not be a problem of Zelay Choser. There's not a problem of Choser, because Zelay Choser, because yeah, like we said, the Eved's not doing work anyway, but isn't there the problem that at least appears to be Ribis? Now, it's not truly Ribis, neither Daraisa, not even the Rabbanon, but doesn't it have the appearance of Ribis?
Because
they owe money. And in fact, Rava says, the Amr of Yosef Baman Yumi Amr of Nachman, because in that sugya about Zenan of Zalei Chosser and living in somebody else's Chosser without Rishus, we said, even though the Chachamim have said that when a person is living in somebody else's Chosser under those conditions, he doesn't have to pay him rent, but that would only be Hilvahu, but if you lent him money, and he lives in the other one's chaser, then he does need to pay him rent, because otherwise it would have the appearance of riz. So Rava is telling his father, in that case, then you should have to pay rent, or you should have to pay for the work that the avodim are doing. Omalei Hadri B, so Rabbi Yosef Bahama says to his son, Hadri B, fine, you're right, I changed my mind, I won't do this anymore. Mephoshim point out, now he's not saying I'm going to reimburse the people for the work that I had the Avodim do so far. The fact is, he's not actually required, it's not considered Ribis, neither Daraisa nor even Darabanan. It's only Merci to Ribis. So all he needs to do is, he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that in Mikano Haba, but really there's not even a Vak Ribis over here, and therefore he doesn't actually need to pay back anything.
But the truth is, the reason why he was doing it
is
because they lent the money. So
that's right. So, no, so the point is, Rav Yosef was saying, I might well have been doing it even if I hadn't lent them money, but Rav is pointing out that's true. But once you lent them money, you drew up this problem, Maris Ayin, and therefore you shouldn't. In this connection, the Ravid explains that this Hatofas Shalabdi, the Ravid learns it would only be if he's doing it basically because he wants to borrow the Eved for a little while. So it's true, Shol Shalmidas, God's one Havi, but in this case, again, it's Zen Nana was Alec Basser. But the Ravid learns if he actually grabbed the Eved with intent to steal him, then he would need to pay the owner. And he says the same thing, it depends whether he's just squatting there or whether he actually intends to take over the character permanently. And that's the Ravid learns that way. The Rashba learns that it doesn't matter. Even in those cases, he would be potter from pain. A person could, conceivably, nowadays it's very difficult to steal karka because you have property records. Back then, a person keeps their own records, and eventually they don't keep their shtar forever, as we'll learn in Baba Basra. So it became easier to take over a property and claim that you actually own it, especially if the owner was out of town, etc. Next. The Gemara says, Itmar, so now we have a further discussion about this matter of grabbing something that belongs to somebody else and doing melacha with it. So now, we said like this, we had said that Rav had said that if a person grabs somebody's Eved and does melacha with him, then he's potter. So first we thought that, how could that be? If an Eved is like karka, then he should be chayev. And we said that no, the reason is because it's a case of Zenen and Zalei Chosser. Now let's talk about where it is actual metalpilin. What if somebody grabs somebody's boat and does malacha with it? And again, according to the Ravid, we would be talking about specifically where he's grabbing it with intent to use it for a while, not to actually steal it, whereas according to the Rashba and many other Rishonim, it wouldn't make a difference. Anyway, so Omar Rav, Rotsa Schora Noito, Rotsa Pchasa Noito. So Rav says, now when the owner is going to be collecting money from the one who did that, he has the choice whether he wants the rent for it, rotza pchasa noisel, or whether he wants to be paid for the depreciation for the boat. Meaning you can have where the normal rental fee for this boat is $10 a day. And meanwhile he figures after the other guy used it, it depreciated by $5, so then he's entitled to the $10. On the other hand, he might find the depreciation was $15, so then he can say, it's true, the normal rental for this kind of boat is 10, but you damaged it, and therefore you're higher for 15. Shmuel says no, he would only be entitled to collect for the depreciation, whether it's more or less than the rent. Amar Papa, like Pliny, so Papa says they're actually not arguing, Rav and Shmuel. Hod Avidala Agra, Hod Lay Avidala Agra. It depends whether this boat is normally meant to be rented or not. So if it's normally rented out, then we can assume the other guy who took it, he meant to do it as a rental. So fine, he didn't sign all the papers or whatever before renting the boat, but nevertheless, in effect, we can consider it a rental. So if the rental fee is more than the depreciation, then the owner can say, look, under normal circumstances, you would have rented it, so therefore pay me the rental fee. And if the pachas is more, then he can say, yeah, but this is more pachas than normal, so therefore you have to pay for that. Whereas Shmuel would be talking about Hodolei Avidah La'agra, Shmuel would be talking about where the boat is not normally rented out, so therefore, so there, you can't talk about collecting rent for it, because it's not something that would normally be rented. All you can talk about is that, all you're talking about is it's gezel, and therefore he'd be chayav for the pachas. For the depreciation.
Who's the one that decides about the bus on the ship?
Or? We're talking about what the ship is normally used for. We can see, under normal circumstances, is this boat being rented out or not? The boy same agra. Another possibility is both Rav and Shmuel are talking about where the boat is normally rented out. We can say it depends on the person himself who took it. When he went into the boat and started using it, was he using it as that he's having in mind to rent it? So then the other guy can tell him, well, in that case, you meant to rent it, so therefore pay the schach. Versus where to begin with, he went into the boat with intent to steal it, so therefore he can only charge him for the pachas, whether it's more or less than the normal amount that such a boat would be rented for. Now, how do we know which one it was? So it could either be, it could either be that he himself says it one way or the other, or if we say Einon Meisim Atzmei Rasha, that a person can't declare that I'm a Rasha, I went to steal, then it would have to be that he said something about it in front of Adim, that the Adim would come to Beis Din, and we would determine it based on that. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Gozo Matveya V'nista V'chola. We had cases in the Mishnah where, for example, a person stole, so we distinguished in the Mishnah between two different types of damage that happened to the stolen object. One was, we said he stole a coin and the coin cracked. Or he stole payrus and they spoiled, etc. Then we had another, so then we said, Mishalim Kishas Egzela, then we said that's considered a shinui, and therefore the Gazlan was coin of the object, and therefore he pays for it as it was worth at the time of the Egzela.
Doesn't matter how much time and why
you're throwing the coin. The patch doesn't matter once he's coin. Well, we're talking about crack. No, so we're talking about that whatever it is. The point is, he stole the coin. At some point, it cracked. Once it cracked, he's coining it with a shinui, because that's an irreversible shinui. On the other hand, the Mishnah had said that if he stole a coin and benifsal, the coin was disqualified, it's no longer usable, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, the various possibilities, or truma that became tame, etc., then he can say haresh alach lefanecha, because there's no change to the actual object. So now let's talk about that. Omer Rav Huna, nistak mamash. So Rav Huna understands the word nistak in the Mishnah means literally that the coin cracked. And therefore, you can't use it as a coin anymore. And nifsel means psalatu malchus. And the word nifsel means that the government declared that this coin is no longer usable. Like we talked about yesterday, or when we talked about when we learned the Mishnah, that you have to remember, you know, first of all, even nowadays, you have sometimes, you know, you could have a coinage of a country that then, you know, if one country invades and conquers and takes over another country, they may well declare the coinage of that country no longer to be, that you can no longer use it, because if you keep on using it, it shows you support the original country. But you can also have, you know, back then when coinage had the picture of the king on it, it was basically like a portable billboard for the king. So you could have, you know, there was a coup, one guy came and overthrew the previous king, and he declares that all the coins of that previous king are now no longer legal tender because we don't want anybody showing their support for the old king. Anyway, so Rav Huna is saying that means psalatu malchus means the coin is completely unusable in the country because the government declared that it's not to be used anymore. Rav Yehuda says no. Psalatu malchus nami hainu nistak. The fact is, if that happened, if the government disqualified this coin, then that would be the equivalent of it being cracked. Then there'd be no reason, says Rav Yehuda, for the Mishnah to make any distinction between them. Ella, hey, nifsel. So what does the nifsel of our Mishnah mean? means shapsalat of medina zu, the yotzim of medina acheres. It means that one country, one area within the kingdom decided we don't want to use these coins anymore, but meanwhile in other parts of the kingdom, the coin is still acceptable. So that could be, for example, in one area of the kingdom, they're revolting against the king and they don't want to use his coinage anymore. It could mean, for example, that for whatever reason, there could be whatever reasons that in one area they don't want to accept these coins as legal tender anymore. So Rav Yehuda says that's the distinction, whether the coin can be used at all, or whether it can be, whether it can't be used at all, or whether at least it can be used in other places. You, Rav Huna, are saying that nifsal means the government disqualified this coin and you can't use it anywhere in the kingdom. Then, consider the other cases in the Mishnah where you have fruit that rotted or wine that became sour. That's the equivalent of psalato malchus because you can't use it anymore. The rotten fruit or sour wine can't be used anymore at all. And yet the Mishnah had said that the ganav is koneh, which Shinui, no, we haven't even turned the other yet. The ganav is koneh with Shinui, and he pays kashas agzela. So why by psalatu malchus? Why are you saying that when the Mishnah had said nifsal, you're saying it means psalatu malchus? It means the government declared you can't use these coins anymore. Shouldn't that be the equivalent of rotten fruit, etc.? And he shouldn't be able to say harei shalach panecha. Why are you saying that he could? Rav Huna answers, Hosam nishtana time of Erechai Hochala nishtana. Because the difference is, when it came to the fruit or the wine, there's an actual shinui in the goof of the thing. The taste, the smell of it are different. Here, Psalatu Malchus, the coin doesn't look any different. It's just the law has changed, and now you can't, use it in the same way as you could before. Now the Marashov in Madura Basra talks about that, yes, Rav Chista is aware, and similarly Rava in the next question of the Gemara is gonna be aware that there is the Mishnah points out you have a case of Trum of a Nitmus where you can say Harei Shalach Lefanecha, even though Trum of a Nitmus can't be used either. The fact is the Gemara Rav Chista understands already, sure, there's a difference between Hezek Nicker and Hezek Sheinim Nicker, but he figures that when the government disqualifies a type of coin, then it is a hezek nicker, because you have a new kind of coinage that's now used, whereas the old kind can't be used anymore, and there's a visible difference between them. This one has the picture of King Pliny, and the other one has the picture of King Pliny. So there is a visible difference, unlike, for example, Trum of Enigmas, which there doesn't. Similarly, Omale Rava Rabbi Yehuda, and Rava asks Rabbi Yehuda a similar question. You're saying that if the government disqualifies the coin, then that's the equivalent of the coin cracking, and therefore that should be considered a shinui, and the ganav does now own the coin, and now he pays the value of it to the owner, rather than saying, Harei Shalach Lefanecha, here's your cracked or disqualified coin back. You have to ask, to have a trum of a nitmus. What about the case in the Mishnah of truma that became tummy? To keep psalatu malchus tummy, that's the equivalent of psalatu malchus, because truma tummy you can't use. And yet the Mishnah had said that he says Harei Shalach Lefanecha. So here also the Marashah points out in Madura Basra, the difference is, in other words, yeah, Rava knew the distinction the Gemara had just said, that there's a difference between a visible change in it or not. So he figured, the fact is, you don't have a visible change in the coin. Yes, you could say, like we just said the Svara before, that this coin looks different than the ones that are circulating now, but the fact is, the coin itself doesn't look any different, and therefore, in that sense, it should be like Trum of Enigmas. So he answers, the difference is that in the case of Truma Shenitmas, there's no visible difference. If you know it's Tomei, you know it's Tomei, but otherwise you wouldn't be able to tell. But here you can actually tell a difference as far as the Hezek, because the fact is the coin looks different than the other coins that are now circulating that were issued by the new king. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, there is a reason to distinguish between Psalatu Malchus and Psalatu Medina. Psalatu Malchus, we would say the coin is completely unusable at all, and therefore that would be the equivalent of it cracking or payless rotting or whatever. Psalatu Medina, we wouldn't say that because you could spend it someplace else in the kingdom. Okay, so now let's talk more about this din, about coins that were disqualified. Itran, Hamalves Chavere Alamatbea. If a person lends somebody money on coins. Now Rashi explains malva means that actually he's selling him any kind of merchandise, and alamatbeya means that they establish a price for it. and specifically a certain kind of coinage. So they made a business deal, to put it in modern terms. They made a business deal, and the understanding was that you're going to pay davka in American dollars, let's say. The nif salama beya, and now that type of coin, that type of currency became possible. But again, you could still use it in a different country, maybe. Yeah. So now that's the point of Rashi that we're talking about. Amalves chaveri means that he's not that he's lending, but rather that he's selling him on credit, and the understanding is that he's going to pay with a certain kind of currency. And Rashi points out that on the other hand, if it was a loan, on the other hand, Rashi says, then he would pay him according to whatever currency he borrowed in. So Tos just discusses that the fact is coins that are disqualified are not considered coins anymore in halacha. So, and the only difference is, so Tosfos explains, Rashi would say, when you're selling, you often specify what kind of currency it should be paid back in. But when you lend money, you usually don't. It's usually understandable or the other way around. Yeah, when a person lends money, usually you don't mention the specific currency it should be paid back in. But Prakmatia, even though he only said that you have to pay the X number of coins, then we understand it means the coins of that country. So that would be why Rashi is talking about selling. However, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because the expression amalves chaveda doesn't really fit with that. So rather, Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. First, Tosfos says that maybe Taka, there's no difference between a loan or a sale. What we mean is, in other words, he told him, almanas, that you're going to pay me such and such coins. So then there's an implicit understanding that if those coins become possible, then he's going to pay, that if those coins are taken out of circulation, that he's going to pay with a different one. According to Rav, and then Shmuel would hold differently. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is that he says, I'm lending you a certain amount of wheat. He tells him, either you're going to give me back the equivalent amount of wheat, or you're going to give me X number of dollars of how much the wheat is worth. So the guy could pay him wheat, but if he's going to give him money, then Rav is going to say he has to give him coins that are currently circulating in this area. So a couple of different possibilities of what the Gemara means, what the case is. Anyway, Rav Omar, Noisan Lemakbeya Hayotza Ba'usasha. Rav says he has to pay him back in coinage that actually circulates at that time. So you can't say, for example, well, this coinage was disqualified by the government, but I'm going to give it to you anyway, because that would be original understanding. No, because once it doesn't circulate anymore, then you can't call it a machbeya. So therefore, it wouldn't be fulfilling the terms of his obligation.
But my baby needs to call somewhere else.
It could be, but Rav doesn't care that it can be used someplace else. On the other hand, Shmuel says that he could tell him, you know what, it's true, you can't use those coins over here, but you could always go and spend them in Mishon. We learned at the end of Kedushin, Mishon is an area in the south of Bavel. Nowadays it would be the south of Iraq. We learned over there were many Psula Yichus who lived over there, how that came about. We learned over there. What? The point is, no, people could go back and forth. The point is, we learned over there that you had a whole thing.
Who was the one that brought all the people back in Yerushalayim?
No, that was Ezra. No, Faket. Ezra took the Psulim with him for the most part to Yerushalayim, but in Mishon we said there were various Psulim who remained over there So we talked about how it came about exactly. There was this fellow who had convinced Nebuchadnezzar to send the Avodim there, and meanwhile let the legitimate Jews themselves remain in Bavel closer to the capital. Whatever the case, the point is, the Gemara establishes over there that Mishon is a place full of Psula Yichus. The point is, though, it's an area, so Shmuel is saying, even if the coin is disqualified in Bavel proper, you can still go and spend it in Mishon. So Shmuel says that he could still pay him back with those coins. He could still pay for the merchandise or pay the loan or whatever, according to Rashi and Tosfos' explanation, using those coins. However, Amar Rav Nachman, Mustabra, Milsid Shmuel, De Islay Urchal Mezal Meshan. It would be more logical to accept that Shmuel is only talking about when he has a way to go to Mishon, meaning, in other words, that Rashi understands that to mean that he's anyway going to Mishon anyway, so therefore he can take the coins with him and spend them over there. The Rashba talks about it doesn't even have to be that necessarily he's planning to go there, just the fact that he could go there. Shmuel would be saying there's enough for the coin to still be considered a legitimate coin. But if there's no way for him to go there, meaning according to Rashi, he's not planning to go there, or according to the Rashba, that there's no way to get him, there's no way for him to get over there because there's a war or whatever going on, and you can't travel between one country and another, loy, then even Shmuel, then Shmuel wouldn't say that that's considered a valid payment. But Eisvei Ravel and Rav Nachman, so Ravel says I have a contradiction on Rav Nachman like this. We know that Maisa Sheni, if you can't bring it to your Shalayim, has to be exchanged for money, and then you take the coins to your Shalayim and you spend them over there. But the Braisa says, Ein Machalon al Amos She'enim Yotzis. You can't be Machalon Maisa Sheni on money that does not circulate in your Shalayim, because the Torah makes a point and says, V'tsauta Kesef B'yotcha, which means V'tsauta is Malachim Tzura. It means you have to have coinage that has an image, that has a design on it. And here, if you have coins don't circulate, then it can't be considered kesef tzura at all. It's considered like just a chunk of metal, and you can't be machal ma'aser sheni on a chunk of metal. And Braisa says, Ketzad, what are examples of that? Hoyula mos kozvius Yerushalmius. Suppose a person had coins kozvius Yerushalmius. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says two possibilities. One is that kozvius means from Ben Kuziva, who's better known as Bar Kochba. He was fighting against the Romans, leading the Yidden and fighting against the Romans for a period of time. That during that time, at one point, he issued his own coinage. They still have. You can find coin collectors have them. Ada Yemazel have coins from his times. Anyway, so Kozvius then would mean money from Ben Kuziva. Yerushalmius would be that from Yerushalayim. Now, in general history books, you find that the general history books don't talk about him ever conquering Yerushalayim. However, based on this Gemara and based on some other things, it seems that there was a period of time when he actually managed to recapture Yerushalayim from the Romans. So during that time, he minted these coins, so therefore Rashi says that's what means Kozvius Yerushalmius. The point is, though, obviously in later times, once his revolt collapsed, you can't use those coins as currency anymore. Nobody's going to accept them. And certainly, you know, if you use them in the Roman Empire, you'd be in big trouble because it means you're supporting a rebel. The other possibility, Rashi says, Kozvius means money that was minted in the city of Kziv, and Yerushalmius would mean coins that were minted in the city of Yerushalayim. Either way, the point is they don't circulate anymore. Or coinage from earlier kings, who also nobody accepts their coinage anymore. Ein machalim, so you can't use those. So Rava says, ha shalachroinim, implying that if the money was from later kings, dumya derishonim, even though it's similar to the rishonim in the sense that they don't circulate now in this area, Mechalin, you could still be Mechal Ma'aser Sheni on them, because again, even if you can't spend them here, you can always spend them someplace else. So the Braisa is not drawing a distinction between whether you're planning to go visit this other place or not, or whether you're able to go visit that other place or not. And it doesn't really matter after all, because the only place you can spend Ma'aser Sheni money is in Yerushalayim. So it's going to depend whether it circulates in Ma'aser Sheni, in Yerushalayim. And you see that even though it could circulate someplace else, even though he has no way of getting there, or he's not planning to go there, nevertheless, it would be valid for me, Michal Ma'aser Sheni. So what are you telling me that Shmuel would say that he can pay back with coins that don't circulate here, only if they can circulate someplace else, and he can take them someplace else? By Ma'aser Sheni, that's not relevant, and we're saying that he could, the implication of the Braisa is he could be Machala with them. Only ones that don't circulate anywhere anymore, like Ben Kuziva's coins, or Molochim HaRishonim, coins from a kingdom hundreds of years ago that doesn't exist, as opposed to Udiu kings of the same country that you're living in now, let's say. Amalei, said Rav Nachman, answers, Hachab Ma'eskinen, Kesheen Malchus Makpidus Zualzu. The Braisa is talking about a case where the kings don't mind if you use a different coinage. So in other words, so they don't care. They're saying, you know, we don't, these coins from an earlier king who we overthrew are not acceptable in this country anymore. However, if you want to take them to another country, we're not going to stop you, basically. So then, in that case, so, uh, So even if he's not planning to go there, he could still, he could give people from that other country can come here and he can give them those coins. You know, to put it in modern terms, okay, nowadays you can travel pretty much anywhere, but if you have, let's say, you know, you come back from Eretz Yisrael with Israeli money, you can always, you can find somebody who came from Eretz Yisrael to visit over here and you give him that money and he can spend it over there. So therefore, it's still considered spendable even if you yourself are not planning to visit Eretz Yisrael again anytime in the near future. So the Gemara says, Ella, well, then you have to ask, if Rav Nachman is saying then that Shmuel's din is talking about where he's not going to Mishon, and he can't spend the money over there, and you have to be talking about Shemalchis Makpidis Zualzu, you're talking about that the kingdoms do mind one another, that the kingdoms are at war, and you can't get there, b'chlal. How are you getting the coins there anyway? After all, if the government officials check and find that you have these coins, you're going to be in trouble, and they're going to confiscate them. And the answer is that you could be talking about Shmuel's din. Could be talking about you could get them and they were difficult. Deloitte Bakshi, we're not talking about they're so machbe that they're going to search your luggage and find the coins. If they find that you're trying to use these coins, then they're going to confiscate them, but they're not necessarily going to search in the first place, so therefore it's not that hard to bring them out. So it's true, you can't necessarily, if you know that there are people from Mishon visiting your area, you can't necessarily show it to them, because if the government finds out, if your government under which you live finds out that you have these coins, they're going to confiscate them. But the fact is that you can hide it in your luggage and take it over there. So if he's planning to go there, then he can take those coins and spend them in Mishon. And therefore, Shmuel says that's considered a valid way of paying them back, because you can tell him it's true these coins can't be used over here. But after all, you'll have no problem putting them in your luggage and taking them to Mishon. And then you can spend them freely over there. And therefore, when I'm paying you back in those coins, then that's fine. Okay. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. Another Braisa says, Ein Mechalin al Moris Shokan Vehein Bebavel. You can't be Mechal al Maisa Sheni when the coins are coinage of Yerushalayim, but the owner and the money are located in Bebavel. So the fruit, Rashi says, it doesn't matter where the fruit is. Wherever the food is, you can be mechalal it, but the coinage has to be in your hand. So if you have money from Yerushalayim, when you're located in Bavel and you have the coins over here, you can't spend Yerushalayim money in Bavel. They won't accept it. So you can't be mechalal. Similarly, v'shal Bavel v'hein kan, or the other way around. If you have money from Bavel and you together with the money are in Yerushalayim. But shall Bavel v'hein b'Bavel mechalin. But if the money is from Bavel and the owner himself is currently in Bavel mechalin, then he could be mechalal ma'aser sheni on that. So katoni mias ein mechalin al mois shokan v'hein b'Bavel. Now what are we saying? You can't be mechalal on your shalayim money when you're located in Bavel. Afal gav the circle the meisach lahosam. Now eventually you're going to be traveling to your shalayim. So shouldn't we say, following the logic that we said before, you're planning to go to your shalayim, the coins will be usable in your shalayim, so therefore it should already be considered valid to be mechal over here, and yet the Braisa is saying you can't, because these coins are not spendable here in Bavel. So what does it matter whether they're spendable here in Bavel? You can spend them in your shalayim, and you're planning to go to your shalayim. Even though you're going to go to your shalayim. And the answer is, here we're talking about where the governments are so much at odds that they're actually going to search your luggage. So now having coins of your shalayim in Bavel or the other way around is not going to work, because it's very dangerous to have such coins in your possession, and therefore so even if you use the Bavel coin, you're machal on it, you're not going to be able to take those coins to your shalayim, because they'll search your luggage and they're going to find them and they're going to confiscate them.
Then the money becomes garbage.
Yeah, well, the point is, in other words, so therefore you can't be machal on it in the first place. So the Gemara says, Yehochi shall Bavel v'hein b'Bavel l'may fazu. Well, in that case, though, the Braisa is saying, if you have money of Bavel and you yourself are located in Bavel, we're saying you could be machal on it. Well, why? What good is it going to do you if we try to bring those coins to your shalayim? They're going to get confiscated. And the answer is Chazu de Zabin Bo Behemo Umasik de Yerushalayim. Fine, but what you could do is you could spend the money right here in Bavel, buy an animal, and bring it to Yerushalayim. They're not going to confiscate an animal from him. They have no objection to that. So therefore, you still have a way. So you still have a way of doing it. Tosfos just points out, actually, there are other Gemaras that imply that you can't buy animals with Maaser Sheni money because the Chum were concerned that you might start raising a whole herd of animals. So, but Tosfos just points out there are different opinions about that, and our Braisa would be following the opinion that says that you could. And the other possibility, Tosfos says, is look, here you have no other way, so therefore, even the opinion that says that usually you can't would allow it in this case. So the Gemara says, "Vahatanya." So now, so you're telling me that you're telling me that the problem is because money of that money from different currencies can't necessarily be spent in Yerushalayim. Is that in fact so? "Vahatanya." We learn in a Braisa, "His skinu shiu amavus yotzes Yerushalayim of nekach." The Chachamim made a takana that money from all different countries should be able to be circulating in Yerushalayim because of that. So Tosfos points out the original thing was in Masechet Shkolim, and explains that people would come from all over the world and bring their machzor shekel. You can't always expect them to change it for the local currency. Therefore, the Chachamim made a takana that in Yerushalayim any kind of money will be accepted. So Bavel money can be spent in Yerushalayim. So why? What did we say before that if you have Bavel money in Yerushalayim, then you can't be mechal ma'aser sheni on it? Why not? Those coins based on the takana can be spent in Yerushalayim. And the answer is the Gemara says Amar Reb Zera like Kasha can bisman sheyabi sota kifal umasa olam when the Jews are in power over the goyim. So people would come from all over the world to Yerushalayim, and therefore the Chachamim could also make a takana that all kinds of coinage are accepted over there. Whereas you're talking a different one, it's talking about the other Braisa, it's talking about when the Goyim are powerful over themselves, which is a nice euphemistic way of saying that they're overpowering the Jews, that they rule over the Jews. So then people from other countries are not able to come to Yerushalayim, so you don't have this takana that all kinds of currencies can be spent in Yerushalayim, and that would be when the Braisa said you can't use Bavel money to be Mechal or Maaser Sheni, that would be what we're talking about, because you can't spend the Bavel coins in Yerushalayim because there's no way of, because you're not easily able to get there because the Goyim are ruling over the Jews. That's one way of explaining it. The Shittim Kubetzis brings from the Ramah the other way around, actually. When the Goyim are in power, then it's very difficult to bring the Peiros for themselves, the Peiros themselves to Yerushalayim, so therefore the Chachamim are going to allow you to bring any kind of money that you have in order to do that, because otherwise, what are you going to do? You can't bring the Peiros themselves because it's dangerous, and you can't bring and if you can't bring the money because you can't spend it, then therefore you're going to have a problem. You're going to be stuck, so therefore the Chachamim would say, in times like that, fine, we'll accept all coins in Yerushalayim. Whereas when Jews are in power, you can easily bring the Peiros themselves to Yerushalayim, so then the Chachamim have no need to make a takana, so that Amal learns like that. They could get spoiled, but at least you have a chance of getting to Yerushalayim fast enough that they won't. So that answers all the different permutations over there. So in short, in other words, what we have is if the money, so again, according to Shmuel, if the money can't be spent at all in the other place, you have no way of getting there because if Malchus Makpidus, to the extent where even they'll search your luggage and confiscate any foreign currency you have, then you can't pay in that foreign currency. But if you can take it out of that chak, then it would be acceptable to pay with it. And certainly, if you're able to freely exchange from one place to another, then Shmuel would also allow it. And there is a Tosfos over here that discusses this point, that on the face of it, the Gemara's question from these Braises was only once we had Reb Nachman's explanation of Shmuel, but even without Reb Nachman's explanation, you have to reconcile the Braises to make them work according to Shmuel, and there's a Lomdash Tosfos over here, which the Marsha has a very long explanation of what exactly Tosfos is saying, So Marsha has some discussion about it, that, that yeah, without, So it goes and explains the Tosfos in some detail. Without Rav Nachman's statement, then yeah, Shmuel would have a way of reconciling the Brisis that, if you didn't have Shmuel telling us at all, then you would say that you could distinguish between Ein Makpidus Klal, where they're not Makpid at all, and therefore, so when they're Makpid, you can say it's not even called a Makbeya, only if you can use it right now over here, and then we have to distinguish between Malchus Makpidus Yosemidai, where they're Makpid so much that they're going to confiscate from your luggage, etc. But once we have Shmuel's and Rav Nachman's statement, then we have to distinguish between three possibilities, where they don't mind at all, versus where they mind a little bit, but they won't search your luggage, versus when they will. So Tosfos and Marshal discuss the lumbness of that in some detail. Okay, since we're talking about the coins of Yerushalayim, the Gemara brings in a little piece of Agadah. Tonarabanan, a zehu machbeya shal Yerushalayim. What are the coins of Yerushalayim? The actual coins that were minted in Yerushalayim. David is shlemi mitzad echad, v'Yerushalayim irakodesh mitzad echad. On one side of the coin was written the words David and Shlomo, and on the other side was written Yerushalayim irakodesh. And what is the coinage of Avraham Avinu? Where now we know that Avraham minted coins because the Tosfos refers to a medrash that says that Hashem tells Avraham, "By Gadlo Shmecha, I will make your name great," and that means Sheyotol Munitin Ba'olam, that his Munitin circulated throughout the world. Munitin, whatever is a Latin word that means money. The word money in English actually comes from that. Also, the word mint, also the word monetary, a bunch of words in English that have to do with coinage come from that root. So Sheyotol Munitin Ba'olam means that Avraham minted coinage that it was accepted throughout the known world, because it was so famous. So what was the coin? What did the coinage of Avraham Avinu look like? So Zokin Ruskena Mitzad Echad. It was on one side of it. There was an old man and an old woman, Obachor B'Sulam Mitzad Echad, and a young man and a young woman on the other side. So Rashi explains that it means Avraham and Sarah on one side and Yitzchak and Rivka on the other. Marashah says maybe not necessarily. Marashah says, well, there's two sides of a coin.
Yeah,
we're saying on one side there was an old man and an old woman, on the other side there was a young man and a young woman. Yeah, so Rashi explains the old man and woman are Avraham and Sarah, the young man and woman are Yitzchak and Rivka. However, Marashah said you don't necessarily need to say that. We know that a nest happened with Avraham and Sarah, and they became useful again, and they were able to have children, so the coin may represent that Avraham and that old Avraham and Sarah turned into young Avraham and Sarah. Now, Tosfos discusses over here that how could they have pictures of Avraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka, or Avraham and Sarah as youthful, on the coin? Aren't you not allowed to make human images? So therefore, Tosfos learns that it means that it was actually only written. On one side, it said Zokin Uskena. On the other side, it said Bachur B'Sula in words, but not in pictures. On the other hand, there are different achronim that talk about that and say maybe not necessarily. Among other things, the Prima Godim, for example, talks about it may only be Isser, or it may only be Osir, only if it's a full face image. On coins, usually you have a side profile picture, and such a thing might be mutter. There are different opinions about that. There's a Rishimis also where it ever talks about that and points out a couple of possibilities, including we could say maybe that the coins were first made without Avraham and Sarah's knowledge, and then once they're there, then fine, you're allowed to use them. And then the Rebbe says another possibility is it was, after all, before Matan Torah. David and Shlomo is after Matan Torah, so you'd have more of an Isser. Avraham and Sarah is before Matan Torah. Maybe they would actually be allowed to mint coins with their own images on them, because the Rebbe discusses it's only a lifnei de lifnei. It's only because it might lead people to make full face pictures, and that in turn might lead them to Avodah Zarah. And by Bnei Noach, you don't necessarily have such a concept, so it is possible that it actually had pictures of them, unlike what Tosfos is saying over here. In fact, whatever points out over there on the face of it, how could you say it just said Zokin Uskena? You see a coin that says the word Zokin Uskena on it, how are you going to know it specifically from Avraham Avinu? So it would work out better if it was, it would work out more straightforwardly if it was in fact pictures of them. And as far as the question of how they could do the pictures, then you have that answer either it was done Shalom Yidaitam, or because it was before Matan Torah and such a thing was allowed to fly. They talk about different drush things. They talk about this, that you have the zaka and the skena and bocha and the sola on the different sides of the coin. It represents that a yid's avoido always has to be fresh every day. He should never allow himself to become zaka and the skena, flip over and go back to being bocha and sola. It talks about the eternity of the Jewish people, that even when we seem old and decrepit, we constantly renew and become a bocha and sola. Again, there's different ideas that are explained of what Abraham meant, to what message he wanted to give over to the world with these coins.